This is News and Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. On today's roundtable, the media's coverage of the Katrina anniversary and should male athletes get paternity leave. Joining us from our New York bureau, Robert George. He's an editorial writer at the New York Post, and Marcelo Suarez Orozco. He's professor of globalization and education at New York University. And joining us from our NPR headquarters in Washington, D.C. is Republican strategist Tara Setmeyer. All right, folks, one of the things that we wanted to do, Robert, let me start with you, is take a look at what we have seen so far across the board in terms of coverage of the anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. We've seen Ray Nagin on 60 Minutes. He was on Meet the Press yesterday, and every media outlet, including this program, we are doing our coverage of the anniversary. What have you seen so far that you think is fair and or unfair?
I would say I think we'd include obviously in that Spike Lee's documentary that started ran last week and is going to be running again tomorrow. I think Spike actually had some interesting insights when we saw the police chief admitting, for example, that he didn't exactly know. He was just passing along some of the reports on crime and things like that, and some of the rumors which fueled a lot of the chaos that was going on. So I thought that was fascinating. I think that generally speaking, I mean, Nagin has in some cases comes off a little bit defensive in the context of what he's doing in terms of defending what he did versus what the federal government was doing. There is still, even a year later, there's still a fair amount of finger pointing as to who was responsible for all of the chaos that was going on. At the same time, after a year, we are, I think, getting a little bit of a fuller picture of where some of the responsibility lies. The question is, though, still a year out, I don't think we're anywhere that much further along going to say this is not going to happen again.
We should note that I'll have my conversation with Mayor Ray Nagin on the program tomorrow. But, Marcelo, one of the interesting points is, as we look back a year later and look at the news accounts, is news accounts don't always give you the full picture. And I think at some point people were of the belief that New Orleans was making a comeback. You saw the New Orleans Saints playing, and often when you see these little 10-second snippets, you see the best of New Orleans. But there's still a lot of work to do.
Indeed, and in a sense, Katrina marks a turning point, certainly in the history of the Bush administration, and in profound ways, the history of our country. And the danger with the media is that quick impressions can shape our kind of understanding of a phenomenon of really catastrophic proportions, where the degree of human suffering went really beyond what individual families, what individuals experienced, but really became a threat to our sense of a community, of a culture, of our trust in the institutions of our society to make life meaningful, secure, safe. This is a wound in our national psyche, and it will take a long time for us to fully understand and fully come to terms with what happened.
Tara, Robert mentions the finger pointing. We're seeing it all across the board, quite frankly, state, federal, local. But one of the things that I'm hearing from people is they really want to see this president go down to New Orleans and say, all right, it's time to get this thing done, be a bigger physical presence in terms of the movement to get this thing on track. Fair criticism?
I think so. Yes and no. I think that the president has made several trips down to the region, more Mississippi as opposed to New Orleans itself. I don't remember the exact number, but he has been on the ground. I thought that some of the criticism immediately after wasn't fair just because of the pure logistics for the president to come there as opposed to, let's say, New York. Just it wasn't a fair assessment as far as saying he didn't have a hands-on approach. But now I think that the president is fully committed to making sure that what happened in New Orleans doesn't happen again, that the government, that the money is appropriated, that they get on it because they need to have action. Finger pointing at this point serves no purposes. And I think that I do believe that the president is scheduled to go down tomorrow to discuss the year anniversary and assess the damage. I think with the media coverage, though, there was just such raw emotion because of the sheer magnitude of what took place. And it's raised so many different issues, from evacuation to post-disaster response to emergency management to the role of state, local, and federal governments to the role of race and poverty in this country. It was fascinating. The American people, I think, were shocked into seeing what was going on there, which warrants such wide-ranging media coverage.
Marcelo, what about the idea of the president rolling up his sleeves and getting down there beyond the photo opportunity a little bit more to make sure that everything is on track? There are those who suggested at his press conference last week that he too was finger pointing and insinuating that Louisiana was behind Mississippi and that they needed to get their acts together. The money was there and they just weren't doing it. Then we turn around and hear from Mayor Nagin that there's too much federal red tape and that's why we can't get it.
Yes, indeed. God dwells in the details, and the question is really moving forward, what kind of momentum will be generated by the activities of this week, and will they be translated into an actual momentum to get beyond the red tape and to really get engaged at all levels of government to mobilize, to bring long-term stability, prosperity, long-term engagement to rebuild one of our great cities.
Yeah, what we are also hearing, Tara, is the idea, switching subjects here, that the president needs to spend a little more time in the state of Michigan. This from the Republican candidate, Dick DeVos, who's running for the gubernatorial seat there. The suggestion is that Michigan is being ignored by the White House, that they are in desperate straits, that the Big Three need a lot of help to find themselves on not only firm ground, but to be able to compete with the foreign car companies, and that Washington and the Bush administration just doesn't understand the magnitude of where the Big Three find themselves and what that would mean to the economy of the United States.
This is a fascinating race in Michigan. I think it was somewhat forgotten in the more high-profile national races that are going on. But what's going on in Michigan is, I think, a slightly different debate, because Michigan, particularly Detroit, has an 8% unemployment rate. It's one of the few states that is not benefiting from the positive economic news and the jobs that are created. Michigan has actually lost 103,000 jobs under the current Democratic governor, Governor Granholm's tenure. And it shows the willingness for candidates to be specific their campaigns are specific to their states and localities, what's important to them. That's what midterms are about in second term presidential years. It's not a referendum on the president, because he's not up for re-election. And it's a bold stance to take, but what it shows is that this gubernatorial candidate, DeVos, the Republican, is not afraid to roll his sleeves up and say, listen, this is important to us. We can no longer allow jobs to leave in mass exodus from Michigan. And you even have the UAW, United Auto Workers Union, split 50-50. In support of the Republican versus the Democrat, which is not usually the case. So when you have a governor that's weak and who has catered to California environmentalists who are very anti auto industry, it makes for a very fascinating race. And I believe that the latest poll shows that it's tied at 47%.
Well, that may be the case, Robert George, but one thing, and I don't have the figures, Tara suggests it's about 8% in Michigan, but one thing we know, I know this for certain. Detroit's unemployment rate is higher than 8%, and certainly among African Americans, it's far higher than 8%. So, Robert George, when you take a look at that, and you understand, again, the importance of the auto industry and the American economy, and you think back to what the United States government did for Chrysler when Lee Iacocca really held their feet to the fire and demanded help, one has to look at this and wonder what.
Well, I think one of the things one has to look at, you're right. I mean, General Motors is in dire straits. Ford, about a week or so ago, announced they've got some serious problems, and they're looking at these massive layoffs. The thing is, though, I mean, the Chrysler bailout was 20 some years ago, and that was specific to the fact that the industry had basically let all these foreign companies just zoom right by them in terms of production and things like that. What's going on right now is it's a little bit different. Some of the structural problems that the industry is having have to do with pensions and all of these other kinds of issues. And it's even more of a global economy than it was 20 years ago.
So, yeah, but here's what isn't different, Robert. If the auto industries falter, the hiccup that it would cause within the American community when you talk about trucking, steel, etc., would be magnitudes which we have not seen before.
Fair point. And to that extent, DeVos has a point, saying that the president should at least make more than just lip service and maybe show up and have some kind of a discussion that's going on. But the fact is, the problems that are going on are truly deep rooted, and it's not just going to be a matter of the president showing up and snapping his fingers and creating a protectionist policy.
Marcelo, how much of this do you believe is the idea that many people were concerned about, that the Bush administration is so caught up in the quagmire of foreign policy that they can't spend enough time with domestic issues and problems?
Well, the question, like in the issue we talked of about earlier, Katrina, is one of being out of touch. There is also the fundamental question, really the elephant in the room, which is, in addition to the unemployment, in addition to the globalization of the economy and the production in the car industry, is this the issue of the continued losing ground of American workers. The wages continue to drop relative to inflation, and American workers are hurting. They're hurting in the context of an energy crisis. They're hurting in the context of a health care crisis. They're hurting in multiple fronts here. And the question is, will the administration become engaged, or are we going to have a kind of a superficial theatrical kind of performance and let the business as usual?
And Ed, you know something? About 2 or 3 weeks ago, I was over in China for about a week, and General Motors has four or five plants that they've opened up in China, and they are going great guns over there in terms of production. And the fact, of course, is the manufacturing and the production is no longer going on in the United States for a variety of reasons. They're opening up all of these plants over there, and this is definitely an issue that the president should at least discuss to figure out different ways for the United States to remain competitive.
All right, let me move quickly.
I just wanted to say something really quickly just about the political aspect of this, and it is in association with the Katrina issue. This administration does absolutely need to make sure that domestic policy issues are seen as a priority, or the Republicans will pay the price.
And that right now is not what the American public sees.
No, it isn't.
Obviously. All right. Nope. Let's turn our attention to what is an interesting concept. This from the Million Family March, a Chicago-based project. What we're finding from Philip Jackson, the executive director of the project, is he is asking men, in particular black fathers, to take their young people to school on opening day, to actually physically be with them, walk them to school, make sure that your presence is felt there. They did this last year. They had about 200,000 men participate, and they are adding 125 cities nationwide this year in hopes of an even greater turnout. Marcelo is an educator. One cannot undervalue the importance of actually being there and providing that assistance to your child.
Family-level issues, being there, providing assistance to children, is the single best predictor of long-term academic outcomes for all children, black children, white children, Hispanic children, Asian children. So in a way, this, of course, is very, very important. Children growing up in two-parent households tend to have certain advantages over children not so not doing so. So there are many, many issues, but also, again, relating it to our earlier conversation, what we need here is structures that support the role of the father. Good jobs, good insurance, good health care. That goes a tremendous way in terms of strengthening the authority of the father, the paternal voice, the voice of authority in the family. It's about jobs, it's about dignity, it's about the re-engagement of many fathers who today find themselves outside of the opportunity structure to really contribute to their family.
You know, with Robert Tara, with about a minute left for both of you, real quick, Robert, tell me, too, the importance of, we should note, even if this father does not live under the same roof as the child and the mother, you can still fully participate in this child's life.
That's exactly right. But I also think that Marcel said, you know, the jobs are obviously an important, which I think, frankly, is why I don't know why we should go for these little superficial, nice little public relations kind of things of daddy, you know, take your kid to school the first day. If the it's a lot bit more important for the father to be at work that day than I think taking his kid to school.
Well, I think that the role of the father has been so undervalued, especially in the Black community over the years, with the government coming in and taking over the surrogate father, that it's been devastating. The single most devastating social policy has been the breakup of the family structure in the Black community. So I understand your point, Robert, about that they should be at work. But I also think it's important that we need to stress the role of the father, how important it is for young Black males to have that positive role model, not depend on athletes and entertainers, because we see what that's turned into. And it affects both boys and girls, not having the father present there. So I think it's important that the role of the father is emphasized more so.
And it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be superficial in the sense of this can be one of those starts. To understand the importance of being there. It's symbolic more than anything, obviously. One does not want anyone to miss a paycheck for this, but often employers will allow for that. Perhaps your job doesn't start as early as school starts. And the note is, if you can be there, you should be. Thank you all.
Fair enough. No price tag for parentage.
Yeah, that's right. Tara, Marcelo, and Robert, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Ed.